careless. And I bet you think you know what I'm going through.
Think you do, I just don't want
to
say.
Don't listen to me, I speak nonsense sometimes. Why is it so hard to live a...
Hey, how's it going, guys? Welcome back. Today, we're going to be talking about track 2 in the Trees Reach entire discography, Self-Absorbed Life.
Mm.
So, what's the deal with this song? As far as I know, it is the oldest song intact from the earliest versions of Some Night You Will Hear Me Crowing. There's only one difference, and that's one very tiny lyrical change at the end of the song.
Mm-hmm.
The very last thing I say is, I think I need to get away from here. But before it was, I think I need a holiday, my dear. And then I realized I'm not British.
Mm.
So I'm going to just say...
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit. I'm German or Irish, if anything, if we want to get back into ancestry. Anywho.
That'll be episode 4.
That'll be episode 4.
Wow.
So Self-Absorbed Life, if we want to just dive right into it, is a song that exactly describes what the lyrical content is about, which is our narrator in the overall arc of the album story, basically telling us who he is, opening up with the line, I am the very image of a living corpse, alive but not in tune with my surroundings, and the idea being to get across a sense of emotional numbness or the world going on around you and you don't really feel it or you don't get any new sensation from it. So let's talk about what it was like to make this song happen.
Yeah.
I wrote this probably back in maybe 2012.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's that long ago.
I think.
Was that...
I was in high school.
Okay. So it was like before we graduated?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Mm.
I just remember that I had just listened to the album Metal by Pink Floyd, which is in their like pre-Dark Side of the Moon, sort of still using acoustic guitars and have like some kind of folksy elements to their writing. I wrote the song to be in that sort of style, and then a few years later, in like 2014, I was going to school, and I was really just learning to play jazz for the first time, and I was listening to piano players like Bill Evans and Red Garland, and I was I remember listening to Cookin' with the Miles Davis Quintet.
Yeah.
And I love the way that that Red Garland solos. He does a lot of those little trill kind of things as he's doing like these kind of bop runs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely was homaging that in the piano take.
Yeah.
for this a lot. This I think is a good sort of example of a type of song that I see going on a lot on this album, which is really short songs with kind of a lot packed in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long album. It's 23 songs, but not many of the songs, in fact, only like 4 songs or 5 songs are over 4.5 minutes. I think Self-Absorbed Life might be the shortest. Maybe I'm Fine is shorter or Missed.
It's shorter. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's probably the most dense one, I would say.
I think so. I mean, it's through composed, meaning it doesn't have like a verse chorus structure. It's just kind of like a really linear, then this happens and this happens and this happens. But the song starts off in the key of G, pretty straight up stuff, going to G chord, E minor and A minor. And then it modulates up a half step into A flat to do the second little portion.
Mm-hmm.
When the drums get more forefront. And then what does it do? It basically pretends like it's going to modulate into the... Well, it pretends like it's going to go back to A flat by... Gosh, I haven't played this song in long enough to know.
Should we listen to it?
Yeah, let's listen to it.
What part are we...
Well, let's just leave it playing.
Frightful dose of empty self-aware. Have to say the least from that careless.
So here it modulates.
And I
sounds like E flat minor, so it's a minor 5 chord. And then, like, there it's hitting like a B flat, dominant 6. And then it goes to an E flat, which is the 5 chord. E flat augmented resolves to a G chord, so we're back where we started. You can pause it. So the song kind of settles in the key of G, then it kind of takes off for a little bit in A flat, but then it just ends up right back where we started, and to me has, in exactly the right way, a very disappointing feeling. and then you hear the slide guitar go from that E flat augmented and slide it back down into the G, so you can really hear that movement where your ear doesn't expect it to go, settling right back where you started. It's kind of all the song has.
It's got a great piano solo.
Yeah.
Which I think is the focal point of the song. Mm-hmm.
I think so too.
Wonderfully recorded too. It just has, it's very textural. And
well, and we didn't use expensive mics, for any of this album, but
literally the cheapest condenser mics you can get anywhere. Mm-hmm. And
there were two, right? Two identical ones.
I don't even think they were identical. We had bought one, and then Luke had the same brand, but a different one.
Oh, that's right.
The brand is Sterling. Any budget musicians will know that brand very well. but they worked great. They recorded most of the stuff in the early years.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the piano recording, or do you want to wait for later?
We can talk about it now.
Yeah, while we're on the subject.
Yeah. We kind of were talking about keeping like a mental tally of how many different pianos we used on this album because it was several. This is the only song where we used a Steinway grand piano, which was in one of the auditoriums at Kirkwood where Riley and I were going to school. I guess you were going there too.
At one point.
Let me turn my phone to do not disturb. But yeah, we were using this Steinway Grand, which is Steinway's like the grand piano of grand pianos. It's like the most amazing piano you will ever play. And it was the most amazing piano I've ever played.
Yeah.
And we were planning originally to do all our pianos with that one. I think the only reason why we didn't is that there was some like beeping alarm always going off, like way in the back of the auditorium somewhere.
Yeah.
Like a fire alarm that needed a battery replaced or something.
I don't know. Whatever it was a curse. Straight from hell. Because so, you can never predict when it was going to go off. And it was a horrible, like, tinny frequency, like, that would make dogs howl.
Yeah.
And we would be like halfway through a take and then it would go off.
We kind of had to try our luck, like between beeps, like seeing if we could get a whole take in or something. It was a nightmare. But it sounds great recorded. It just has a really good presence to it, even using our just two cheap microphones. But I definitely think that Self-Absorbed Life has my favorite piano sound on the album. It's just very focused and very clean.
So that was piano number one.
We'll say that's number one.
And we can keep counting them as the songs go.
The next two songs have two different pianos.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. As we said in the previous episode, if you tuned in, Self-Absorbed Life was the first song that we had Luke do a basically trial recording of. And we just home recorded him playing the drums along to it to see if we would be able even to re-record the drums for the whole album. I remember my experience of that was realizing, how poor quality the recording of the drums that we had first done was. They were really muffled and the room was just super dead. And then even just recording in our little basement room over here with Luke playing his kit, it was like, oh, this really wakes the song up pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the drums were an exciting thing. Are an exciting thing for me to play, if you didn't know that.
They still are, huh?
They still are, yeah. Still this crazy after all these years.
Oh.
We go back to that. Paul Simon.
Venmo.
I remember one of the things that really excited me about this drum part was I heard one of the first times playing it, when we were considering re-recording it, I think is when I heard that drum fill at the end.
The triplet thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's play that fill.
Okay. It's just a little taste.
It's really good.
Oops.
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 Great film.
I love that.
Yeah. That really, that to me, along with the piano solo, really made this song.
Mm-hmm.
And really made it like really stand out as we were all just kind of like using our own vocabulary musically mm-hmm. to speak in the song.
Yeah. Can we go listen to the piano solo too?
Yeah.
Because I don't think we ever did that. And we should also talk about those responsive guitars in the second half, for sure.
Yeah, I'll get in that later.
Yeah, this song also just has a really great groove. Like when it pulls out from when Riley starts singing there.
Yeah, you delay a little bit before you start really laying to the hi-hat.
Yeah.
Like, let's go back and listen to that again. So it's like...
Yeah.
Like you kind of let the... You let the open hat like settle a little bit, and then you sink into the groove.
Yeah.
It's just a great little delay to like, oh, like once it comes in, it just feels really great.
Yeah, you can really feel it. So Trees Reach can groove, just so you know.
Yeah, the Twitter rumors, honestly, guys, what's going on?
Yeah, we can groove. So
you heard it here first, folks.
I want to say this. So we were in the studio recording this piano solo part, and I was kind of messing around. Trying to find the right ride sound, and none of the rides that I was using was really like cutting it for me, and so I'm actually using my top hi-hat to ride on this part.
Yeah.
Because it was just high-pitched enough and had a short enough decay that I think it fit that part really well.
Does,
and then
once
I go to the full snare, I switch to a ride.
And it's a cool sound how it kind of graduates to a real ride cymbal.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like you're hearing the older brother now that like the real snare is as opposed to
it's like,
the
hey, I'm
side
here too.
Stick. Yeah.
Yeah.
Luke's drum kit is a family.
Yeah.
Just
found out. It is.
Wow.
Yep.
It is. It's beautiful.
We're all just one big family.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the guitar on this song, Riley.
Oh, yeah. So, doing the guitars for this song, the electric ones particularly, was kind of a shifting moment for me in my guitar arranging life, career, where I figured out, or I for the first time really focused on what instruments am I blending with? What instruments am I reacting to? And how to best go about that and really add to the song? Because you could listen to the song without electric guitar and it would be, the song's there. Like, the electric guitar is not at all essential. But it really adds a lot of sweetness and a lot of cool moments if you can do it right. And I think this was the first song where... in my process of re-recording a lot of the guitars, I really think that I kind of made strides doing that. So there is, Electra comes in at the key change, right?
Do you pull it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's listen to a little bit.
Oh.
So up till this moment, you hear that there's no electric guitar. There's acoustic guitar. In fact, it's just acoustic bass and drums, and vocal.
And the piano
comes in here.
Yeah, so the electric is pretty minimal in that first part, but adds a little crunch.
Is there any way... Do we have the stems for this right now?
No, I didn't think we'd be doing this one today, so I didn't grab those.
It's uncomfortable.
But if you go to the... Well, we already listened to the piano solo, so we don't have to play that again. But in the piano solo, there's a few little responses that the guitar does that are just kind of subtly in there.
Well, we could listen to it.
I really like how they... How they turned out.
Let's point them out.
Right. It's kind of in the second half of the solo.
Oops. So.
Kind of fitting in the pocket of the piano there. Just a little sparkle.
Mm. Something.
A little twinkle.
That was cool about recording this album is, you know, none of it was recorded live as a band. We didn't do anything at the same time, which is cool in some ways and frustrating in others. But one cool opportunity that it lends is, you know, I was improvising those piano rhythms and that solo. Mm-hmm. And so then when Riley goes to overdub a guitar later, he can meticulously say, like, how do I want to respond to this?
Yeah.
And it's kind of, I don't know, it's sort of like a manufactured
right.
band communication experience or whatever.
Yeah.
But all over this album, we have moments like that where we said, okay, we don't just want to construct the song. We want to use the fact that we're always existing kind of outside of all the parts to be like, what does it need right here? And what would really sell this moment? Embrace the fact that it was such an atomized process and we can add those details as we hear them and make it feel more alive.
It allowed for some certain kind of magical moments like that we wouldn't have been able to do otherwise.
Yeah.
But it is also the reason why the album took like 5 years.
Yeah.
I've got this thing pulled up. Speaking of different times and places that things were recorded, for the first half of the album, because I got lazy, I made a document that has every single audio clip on the album, what it is, where it was recorded, and with what. Like, what gear, and all that.
Now, for only donating $10,000, you can receive
half document. I might fill out the rest of it sometime.
It's a small price to pay.
It's really boring to do. Mm-hmm. But so, for this song, the oldest audio element is the piano, which was recorded in June of 2015, at the Kirkwood Auditorium on that Steinway. 6 months later, I recorded the acoustic here in this very room in front of that bookshelf.
Wow.
We hung a blanket in front of it and used some mic stands to make a fort in the basement, like you do.
A fort.
And recorded with one of those cheap mics. And it's one of the better sounding acoustics on the album, I think. So there's that. A year and a half later, we recorded the... drums. A year and a couple months later.
Oh.
Jeez. We recorded the drums and the bass. And then a few months after that, I recorded the electrics. It's all very separate, strewn apart process. But you wouldn't really guess it listening to the song, I don't think.
Do we need to give any shout outs for those electrics that you used? Or. Were they all our electrics?
For the first half of this song, and on a bunch of the songs on the album, I use a Gretsch Country Gentleman guitar, which is a beautiful guitar that has a nice woody sound that we borrowed from Russ Allen. So thanks, Russ.
Thank you, Russ.
We love borrowing your guitars.
We love you.
We do.
But so, we might love borrowing his guitars more.
A little bit more than we love Russ. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. I don't...
At least we're being honest about it, right?
I really hope everybody laughed at that joke.
Yeah. But,
I just hope you guys like the podcast. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
Anyway, I just Didn't have much more to say other than, I guess while I have this pulled up, it's an interesting note that it was almost entirely in this basement that we recorded the album. Mm-hmm. So whether that was doing like programming strings out here or recording electric guitars direct in out here. Or
I recorded bass standing like right over there. You can't see it.
And then we recorded
just look over there.
We recorded Hank doing saxophone and clarinet just right here at the bookshelf and several acoustic guitars over there. So yeah, this is kind of where it all happened here. And then especially in the back music room.
Also, there is a photo on our Instagram from like 2016.
In my room?
No, in here. Oh. And there's like string players. Yeah, yeah.
Flute players.
Yeah, right there.
Yeah, it was for
Lillian.
It was for a song that didn't end up making it. Well, it kind of made it on the album. We'll get to that when we get to this.
It's wild.
Stay tuned.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. There was that session, all the sessions with the brass players that we ended up only like sampling bits from because it changed so much.
Yep.
Which is too bad.
Mm-hmm. Well, not too bad. Mm. It's too bad for them.
Yeah.
The right choice for us.
That's all I really have to say about the recording process.
I think that slide guitar bit you do, like, coming right into the guitar solo, you hear the guitar is like, me, or yeah, the piano solo, you hear the guitar is like, me, slide into a G chord. I think that was one of the very last things we recorded for the album.
Yep.
Because I remember listening to this song and thinking, going from an E-flat augmented into a G sounds like we just don't know what we're doing.
If you just slam into a G.
And I know what I'm doing in my head, but I didn't feel like it was communicated very well. And so we talked about, I'm like, I kind of want to hear like a falling motion where you can hear the common tones of those chords. Like, because an E-flat augmented is E-flat, G, B.
It's the same as a G augmented.
So all I have to do is take that E-flat, shift it down a half step onto a D. And then you have a G chord in the second inversion.
Yeah. So we wanted someone to guide your ear.
Something to take you into that new key again. So yeah, that was one of the very last things
we had like mixed it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, I wanted to do like a slide thing. And so I just...
I think you set up here.
Yeah, I just did it in the corner over there. And I just recorded slide thing, layered it, double track it, add a bunch of reverb. Everything sounds good double tracked with reverb. This is Mixing Tips 101.
With Rick.
I'll be starting my series later on, but really it's just that, double tracking and a bunch of plate reverb. So.
Mm-hmm. Might be able to call it Mixing Tricks with Rick.
I like that.
Sorry guys, we brought in a wild horse.
Yeah.
What was mixing this song like?
Mixing this song, I don't honestly remember much for this song. I couldn't tell you any specific memories.
Wait, keep trying to think.
Okay.
What I'm looking for is this like big thing of like poster board or cardstock, and I've seen it recently, where we wrote out all the songs and had mixing notes from like the first draft of mixing. I can't find it right now. Maybe we'll pull it out for a later episode or something.
That's fine.
So, now we come to the point of the episode where we say, what are things you still love about this song, and what are things you would do differently? Mm-hmm. Rick, let's start with you.
Yeah, so my favorite part of the song probably is the sudden key change going into that part of the song when the guitar and piano come in. I think that's... the melody is great there, the instruments blend so well, and the song really takes off. And so between that, piano solo, certain little guitar moments and piano moments throughout, I think they're just really tasty and fun, and I enjoy listening to the song still. If there's anything I would change, it would probably be in the mixing. I would do more volume automation to bring out certain elements here and there. So when if the guitar does something and the piano does something, to like actually do more to bring those out and like draw attention to them, as opposed to just letting them sit stagnant, because that works most of the time. But I think in this song a little more volume movement might have helped help draw your ear to the certain elements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this song has a lot of really singable moments, to your point. So there, I catch myself, like, the parts I remember of this song will be, well, not only a vocal line, but, like, the piano might do a little fill, or the guitars might do something, or the drums, you know, we all remember that fill at the end. So it's really singable. Like, I think it's really musical at its core, which is cool. Again, I'm really still really proud of that piano solo. I really like that moment when it modulates and the drums come in full. That groove's super good. It's hard to say I would do this differently because it would basically mean it's a different song. But I do know that if I were given the task of writing track two on this album for this concept, I would probably come up with something very, very different. I would never write this song today.
Lyrics or music?
Both.
Hmm.
Lyrics for sure. Which isn't to say that they're bad. I cringe a little bit at some moments for sure, but I don't think they're bad. They're just very much not me, and I think they're very much not the tone of the rest of the album for the most part. Yeah, and then I think I'm at just a different point in my life where I'm not quite as interested in, like, and now it's going to modulate, now it's going to do this thing, and now it's going to, like, I don't know. Which, it's all sure. really cool, and if the song calls for it, I'll do it. But yeah, I remember being really in that mindset at the time, and it was cool for the time, but wouldn't do it the same now, for sure.
Yeah, for me, there's not... I can't really think of anything that I would do differently. I mean, if I'm really going to, like, nitpick, maybe, like, a different ride pattern on that second half of the piano solo, because I'm kind of, like, alternating. I think, like, something more static would have been better. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be honest, this isn't one of those songs that, like, I'm just going to listen to outside of the context of the album. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's not like one of those I'm going to turn on because I feel like listening to Self-Absorbed Life. Yeah. But then going back and listening to it, there are, like, a lot of parts that are really great, like everything that we've talked about. But yeah, it's just not one of those ones that I would just listen to outside of the context of the album.
Go like this really quick.
You got
other eye.
Got it. Well, do we want to wrap up with a couple fun facts?
Let's wrap up with a couple fun facts. The first fun fact is that this is our most streamed song on Spotify, and we have no idea why.
Yeah, like, no one ever talks about this song.
No one talks about it. It's no one's favorite Trees Reach song. We didn't promote it. Obviously, it wasn't a single. And it's also not the first track on the album. You would think that maybe some people give the first track a listen and go, eh, and that first track would be the most listened. But it's track two. And for a while, it was by an enormous margin.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
our most streamed song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a theory that someone left this song on repeat overnight by accident.
Yeah.
Because I think we ended up looking at our stats on our profile, because you can see where and when the traffic was going on. It was like all one day.
Spotify for Artists is so awesome.
It's such a great resource.
Little plug. They might not give us a lot of money, but they're
what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Their app is
we're just dumb
so
musicians.
Useful for musicians. It's really great.
Yeah, it is.
But yeah, we looked at the stats for that week or that day or whatever, and saw that they had just massively inclined.
Which ties into the second fun fact, which is that we have only ever played this song once live.
Yeah, it was back in 2015, and I think it was when, like, Lover Lover was kind of a brand new song, and we had recorded those two, which on the album flow into each other, and so live I remember doing this song going straight into Lover Lover, and it was like a new thing that we were doing. But yeah, only once.
Man, I've... That's gone.
Yeah, I don't even remember what I played. Like, did I play bass on it?
Yeah, you probably did.
And then you played guitar.
It was me on. No, it was me on keys.
Oh, right.
It was when we were borrowing Wurlitzers from that guy.
Gosh. Oh, Jeff.
$20 Jeff, a show.
Bless $20 a Jeff show. Kraft.
Bless. Jeff Kraft. Bless.
Oh, man.
So, but here's the thing. We're saying, you know, Self-Absorbed Life is no one's favorite Trees Reach song. If it is your favorite Trees Reach song, let us know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We won't do anything about it, but we just, I'm curious.
Well, we might give you a free shirt.
We might give you a free shirt.
Yeah.
If people start asking us to play Self-Absorbed Life live, maybe we'll do it.
Maybe. It's...
If you dare us to, maybe we'll do it.
Maybe the solo portion.
Just rotate between a G and a B flat.
And if we turn into a neo-soul groove, it would totally work.
There we go.
That's true.
Yeah.
Those
chords come to the next Moco Jam Night, whenever that will be.
Hashtag Corona triggered.
At least as we're talking about this, the coronavirus is still... Corona-ing people. Wow.
Nice.
So,
yeah.
Nice. Yeah, thank you.
Do you guys have any other thoughts before we say goodbye?
No, I do not. Okay. So join us next week for track 3, which is Lover Lover.
Mm. Thanks, guys.
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Wash.
Closed-minded as it is, so I don't see why they think that statement gets through.